News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Good morning. This is Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg, and it's time for the Garden Line with Mike Wiggins. And why wouldn't it be the best day of my life hanging out with the mayor?
Hey.
How about that for a song?
How about hanging out with Meg? That's what's good about it. Who is that?
It's best day of my life. Let me see. Who is this by? The American Authors.
The American Authors?
Yes.
Really?
From 2014. How's that? But I like that song.
Wow, it's a nice song.
Very upbeat song.
Maybe a little one-hit wonder, but...
Yes, that's very true.
That's okay. That, you know, got your toes a-tapping.
Well, I have to find something upbeat and fun for you.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because it's always the Garden Line and something good to talk about.
It is fun.
And it's so gorgeous out today.
Oh,
my gosh.
Oh, my goodness. It's just absolutely perfect.
I love this weather.
Well, and you look at the forecast... It looks like we're going to have the same weather for most of the week.
All week
Maybe
long.
A little bit of rain. Is it Thursday or Friday? Possible, but it all looks just great.
It's beautiful. I love it.
You know, this is kind of what I expected in October. You know.
Yes. I'll take it.
I'll take it in November.
It's sweater. Well, you got your sweater on. It's like sweater weather now.
Absolutely. So it is nice.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of things garden-wise that we can talk about today. One is planning.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some interesting articles written by some of our favorite extension agents about the fall and what we can do in November. So we can talk about that. What we might want to talk about... While we're talking about the weather,
mm-hmm.
and we haven't pulled this out of the files in a long time.
Uh-oh.
But I've had a couple of people say, Mike, when do you think we're going to have the first freeze?
Oh.
Okay. Well, I hedge on them because this is a hedge right here. We've had our Garden Line, I don't even know what you would call this, a forecast model that says when is the first time we're going to have a freeze. We're going to be 32 degrees this fall. And we've got a bunch of percentages.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. November 11th, coming up.
Ooh, that's pretty quick.
Only a 10% chance.
Okay.
That we're going to have a freeze. So let's jump ahead to November 28th. There's only a 30% chance we'll have a freeze. Go even money to 50%. That's December the 10th.
Wow.
And we'd go way ahead to 70%. No, let's go to 80% chance we'll have a freeze before or on December 28th.
Oh, okay.
So it's coming, but maybe not quite as soon as we would think.
Interesting.
And that's
what are those from? Where are those numbers from?
Oh, this is by some guy on the internet. That's a predictor.
Mr. AI. Yeah,
and we've done this before, and I don't think we've ever been sure that it was accurate.
Okay.
But
it sounds about right, really.
But it does sound about right, really. So we're not going to worry about it too much till we get 50% chance, which is December the 10th.
That works for me.
Oh, yeah. It works for me, too.
No problem.
Because I saw something on the internet yesterday or the day before. Somebody had posted on the internet a picture of the beach and said, I'll take 100 degrees over 40 degrees any day.
Right.
Well, that's kind of a stretch.
Yes.
100 degrees was a little much.
My favorite is right where we are right now. 70,
well, I was just,
yes, 75.
You took the words out of my mouth.
75, I'm good.
Here we are right here, and it really is a pretty day.
Oh, gosh.
So take it out and do what you need to do.
Beautiful.
No doubt about that. Just a couple of notes here. I was going to mention, I guess it was, 2 weeks ago, we had Paul from Blue Sky on, and poor Paul, he wanted to talk about native plants, and we never got to it.
we really do have a plan for this show, but a lot of times
we've never reached our plan ever. But what I do want to mention, because I think it's kind of cool, is what the University of West Florida has done on what they call their new heritage roots garden. It's a place to, as they say, showcase native plants, which have been important insofar as our history is concerned in Northwest Florida. They've planted native ground covers and shrubs and trees that they say has provided food and medicine and building materials and that type of dyes, textiles, that type of thing for our area. And for you and me, Meg, they have labeled every one of them with the English name and the Latin name,
which
you actually, you've
they got did that for me.
That's just for Meg, exactly. But so that is out there at the University of West Florida. You might want to look into that. It's got about 15 plants planted now, I understand, that has all this information and what it has given us as a society.
Oh, wow.
Here in Northwest Florida. Really kind of cool.
That
oh,
is.
Oh, and also it goes way back. So they put a Muscogee language on each plant, too.
Really?
It goes back to the Indians.
Oh,
that,
I love that.
Lived here. So cool. And, of course, I have to – that's the story on that. But I have to mention one plant that they highlight. This is your favorite, Meg. The Yaupon holly.
Uh-huh.
The Ilex vomitoria. Remember that one?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Can't seem to forget it.
Yeah, and it says when they had their grand opening, when they cut the ribbon and all that, they took the Ilex vomitoria and made what they called a black tea and served it to the people there.
Really?
Because that's a byproduct of that Ilex vomitoria way back in the day, which makes it a native plant. So in any event, I hope you'll get out there because University of West Florida, of course, has now this new heritage roots garden. They've always had the camellia garden, which is spectacular. And their campus looks great. And I congratulate University of West Florida and Pensacola State. Their campuses are so well-maintained, pruned, fertilized, mowed, and I think that's important.
Absolutely.
I think if you go to school, you want it to look nice and have a nice landscaping. You don't want it to be weedy and a mess. And this means a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Both schools do a beautiful job of that and should be congratulated.
So if I want to see this exhibit about the native plants, where on the campus is that?
Let's see.
And when again?
Yeah, let's see. I had a little note on that. Let me find out where that is. And, of course, I can't find it.
Okay. So, we'll do the research department. Yeah,
Will come up with that.
But is that this weekend?
Oh, anytime.
Oh, anytime. No,
it's
okay.
It's a walk-on. It's a free deal, just like
okay.
The Camellia Garden is.
Uh-huh.
So a nice little trip out there to West Florida, if you hadn't been out in a while, to see the new Heritage Roots Garden and the Camellia Garden. Because the Camellia Garden, let's face it, it's going to be blooming here very shortly. I hope we can get our buddy Skip Vogelsang to pay us a visit.
That would be great. It's time, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. We do it every year.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so maybe Skip will come in. And, of course, when he comes in, he always brings this tray of beautiful camellia blooms and describes them all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always fun.
Good. Well, we have to get him on the list.
Oh, no. I'll see him this week. Matter of fact, I've got a meeting, and I will be with him tomorrow.
Oh, good.
And
okay.
I'll see if I can make the sale. See if I can get him.
There you go.
And he will. He will. He does a great job.
Yeah, he's good.
He is
That'll
good.
Be fun.
So in any event, that's what we'll have. Now, the other thing we want to do, I got a couple of notes from Larry Williams. Remember Larry Williams? He is the county agent over, I want to say, Okaloosa County. Yeah, Okaloosa County.
Uh-huh.
About what we can do to what we can do to evaluate our personal landscaping. About really just taking a trip through our yard and evaluating what's good, what's bad, what's ugly, and go from there insofar as planning for next spring.
Huh.
So he has a nice article. We'll mention that in just a little bit. And then he also had another one about not worrying too much about some of the yellowing on some of our plants because it's just going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk a little bit about that.
That sounds good.
And I've got a lightning round here of things to do now, things that we have talked about on the Garden Line for a long time this fall, but now's the time.
Now's the time to do it.
Time to act. So,
all right.
In any event, all that's coming up.
All right, we'll come back with that in just a minute after the break. This is the Garden Line. And as always, if you've got a question for Mike, all you have to do is text it in at 850-437-1620. We'd love to hear from you this morning. We'll be back in just a minute. Good morning. This is Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel, and this is the Garden Line every Tuesday, starting at 9 o'clock till 10. Good morning, Mike.
Morning, Mick. How are you? I know we have a text, but I was going to mention you asked me where the West Florida New Heritage Roots Garden is.
Yes.
It's adjacent to the University of West Florida Archaeological Institute. That's where it is.
Okay. Well, then we can kind of Google GPS that and find out.
I think so.
Get some directions. I just was curious where it was on the campus.
Oh, okay. Absolutely.
Good deal.
And anyway, it's just like I say, if you're going to go look at that, check out that Camellia Garden here in the fall. It's going to be a show, just a show place here when it all starts to bloom. But anyway, I know we have a text.
Yes, so this is the Garden Line right here on Pep Talk. All you have to do is text in a comment or question at 850-437-1620. This one actually came in yesterday, so I saved it for you from our friend Bob. And he says, Mike, good morning. Centipede grass issue, what is wrong? And he sent a picture in, and I guess the best way to describe it is kind of very green on one side, but then you have this sort of brown, discolored area.
Exactly. And of course, the first thing I think one would look at is whether it is a fungus of some sort, like the old Rhizoctonia. That's one of your favorites, the Rhizoctonia brown patch fungus that St. Augustine gets. But it'll also get into centipede on a limited scale. Mm-hmm. But generally, the look of that is you've got the brown, which grass is just really has been affected.
Some yellow in there.
Exactly. And then you've got an area that's kind of yellow and brownish on the edge, and then you've got your good grass. Well, this picture shows this spot is very well defined. Mm-hmm. My first inclination was maybe it's damage from a dog, but it looks a little big for that. Mm-hmm. But it looks like maybe something spilled on it. Maybe weed killer was used, and maybe it just got a little too heavy in that one area. That could possibly be, because remember now about centipede. Centipede has a lot of advantages, but one disadvantage of centipede is its longevity. 7, 8, 9 years, you'll begin to see spots very similar to what we're seeing here after when it comes out of dormancy, and that spot just won't come back. It's just the nature of that plant. It just has a limited
lifespan. I guess we need to find out how old that is.
Yeah, exactly. But that to me looks like more like, I call it cultural damage. Something has spilled on it, like I say, fertilizer.
Almost like gasoline look to it in a way.
No, that's a good point, Meg. It could be. But it doesn't look like to me, but from the picture, that it's a disease that one would have to treat. And insects really aren't going to cause that kind of damage, not in centipede. So, I would just look at maybe what has been done in the past to see if that's a factor.
Okay, thank you so much for sending that in, Bob.
Oh, Bob, I appreciate it.
Yeah, we got another question for you. This is from Steve in Escambia Bay. How do you balance watering the flower garden this time of year with a wide variety of shrubs, flowering plants, and camellias? And also another question came in, even though it's gorgeous, it's dry. What do we do?
There's no question. I had a meeting yesterday. The first question to come across to me had nothing. The meeting was nothing about gardening. But I sometimes get that. He said, okay, the weather is perfect. It's just beautiful. And it is dry again. Mm-hmm. What do we do? And what I say is, I'll just give you a personal thing. I've turned off my sprinkler system. Not forever, but just in the last couple of days. We had the nice rain. Mm-hmm. But I will be turning it back on today. I think we normally, during the summer here on the Garden Line, you know, it's all different all over the county. You know, northern part of the county, Gulf Breeze, it's different water-wise. But as a rule, to kind of average it out, we were going 3 times a week, 30 minutes. I think that works. I would at least be watering every 3 days, let's say maybe every 4 days, depending on where you live, in this dry spell. Now, if we should get a front coming through, and that's what happens this time of year. Mm-hmm. We have the beautiful weather, then we get the front, then it gets cold. Once we get that front coming through, then turn off the system, turn off your hose. But the question that we're looking at here is how do you balance all of this? And I think it's all, I'm going to call it manual, insofar as you've got to look at the weather that day, seeing the last time it rained, water if it looks dry. And keep in mind, the grass is not totally dormant yet. So your grass will tell you when it wants water. Remember, if you mow it and you see the tracks of the wheels of your lawnmower after you mow it, that won't damage the grass. But that's your grass telling you that it needs water.
Oh, that's a great tip.
And footprints. if you walk across your yard and you kind of leave footprints, that will tell you that your lawn needs water. Insofar as the shrubbery is concerned, you might not have to pay that much attention to that. At least once a week, I try to get a little bit of water on it. But if you've got some tropicals, for example, say in containers, you've got hibiscus. It's going to tell you real quick this time of year when it needs water. It's just going to have the leaves are going to look like old dog ears hanging down.
Right.
And you'll know you have to water those. So no matter what, in this dry weather, if it's not raining and your container plants are outside where they get rain, watch those real close because they're going to dry out much quicker than your lawn or your shrubs.
And he did ask about the camellias.
Okay, insofar as watering is concerned, oh, yeah. You want to keep those watered on a schedule because it really is an important time for them because they are blooming. And if you really let them dry out, you might have less blooms than you would have otherwise. So, yeah, pay very close attention to your camellias. This is an important time of the year for them. They need a little attention.
Okay. All right. Great questions coming in. We've got some more for you, Mike, but what we're going to do right now is just take a quick break. 850-437-1620. If you've got a question for Mike on the Garden Line, we'd love to hear from you. We'll be back with your questions and his answers in just a couple minutes. Welcome back to the Garden Line on Pep Talk with Mike Wiggins. And we've got lots of questions rolling in, Mike.
Very good. You know, one thing I'd like to mention, Meg, is we have a new sponsor.
Hey.
A new sponsor on the show, and we really appreciate it. Bailey's Farmers Market, we all know it's all the way we all go buy our produce and all of that. But there's so much more.
Yes.
So much more at Bailey's. I'll just mention two things. One, here it comes. First time I've used these words this year.
Okay.
Christmas trees. Oh,
true.
Yes. True. And it's closer than you think.
Some people have already started.
Oh, I know. Absolutely. The unbelievable best selection ever. Of all kinds. Fraser firs, of course, are my favorite, but they've got many other kinds there too. And then jump to next spring. If you want tropicals, they have got the best and have expanded into landscaping plants also. I could go on and on because it's just a great company and it's a great service to Pensacola. And you drive down Davis and it is a full parking lot.
Oh, every time.
So we appreciate them sponsoring our show.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And as we move forward during each season, we can talk about them even more.
That sounds great. Well, thank you so much for sponsoring the show. That's awesome.
Oh, you bet. Thanks.
All right. Well, speaking of, sponsors would be our listeners who are supporters. So that's the same group. And want to say thank you for everybody that's texting in this morning. We're going to try to get to all your questions. May not get to them in this half hour, but we'll try this one. We've got just a couple minutes on this one, Mike. Talked about this last week. Will ryegrass help or hurt centipede grass? Also, will it deter weeds?
Great question. One, I don't believe it's going to do much insofar as weed suppression is concerned. No, but it will not do any harm. And that's one thing a lot of people have said over the years. Oh, I don't want to do it because it's going to harm my grass. No, it's not going to harm your grass. All the experts have sort of agreed with that. But what it might do positively is add some nutrients into the soil or into the turf, if you will, moving forward into next spring. I don't believe it's a major thing. It doesn't substitute for fertilizer and all the other things that we do, but that is a positive because there really is no negatives. Well, I shouldn't say that. There's one negative.
Uh-oh.
You know what that is. You got to mow it.
Don't
even think about putting that lawnmower up for the winter. Because if you put ryegrass out, it will mow it. One ryegrass planting I always loved. I had a neighbor in a neighborhood where I lived early on, and every year they would write with ryegrass in their zoysia lawn, "Happy New Year."
Did they really? Oh, yeah. That's so cool.
They just kind of sprinkled it with, like, you know, making out the letters.
Wow.
And it really, really was cool.
That is good. I can't even imagine that would work. I'd do it. It would just be a big blob.
Talk about big blobs now. And this is I'm going to repeat this. I know our listeners get tired of me saying this, but do not get that ryegrass in your flower bed.
Oh.
It is. It will come. Ryegrass will come up in this parking lot.
Really?
It really will, with enough water. But you put it in your flower bed, it'll come up, and it's just a mess.
Oh, no.
So I always say get a hand seeder and back up to your flower bed and rotate the seeder and to get the seed out so you don't get any behind you in the flower bed.
Okay, good advice. Another fine tip from Mr. Wiggins. This is the Garden Line on Pep Talk. We're going to be back right after the news, so don't go away. Got more questions to answer from our listeners, and if you've got one, 850-437-1620. We'll be back with Pep Talk, the Garden Line, and Mr. Mike Wiggins right after the news. Good morning. This is the Garden Line on Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg. Mike Wiggins is here, and he's got so much great advice. I always love hearing every little tidbit and little sneaky little tip that the gardener has for us. Wonderful.
We're a little sneaky over here. You're right.
Well, now, Meg. I know why my gardens never grew, because I didn't know all of this good stuff.
I hear you.
But we got lots of questions coming in. We've been talking about grass and sod and stuff, but we're going to change the subject a little bit. This question says, what's the best way to propagate a camellia bush, and what is the best time of year to do this? So explain propagate.
Well, propagate means you have a camellia bush, and you would like another one or more than one,
right?
To come off of that bush in order to just to reproduce it, if you will.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now, there it gets a little complicated, and that is why we have Skip coming on to tell us how to propagate camellias, because he does that. He could talk about air layering. Air layering is one way to do it. Of course, the other thing is to take cuttings and put cuttings in soil, and they grow from there. The best time to do it, I would probably think, would be in the early spring. But there are some details there that get a little dicey, and Skip can really help us with that. And I'm going to, when I see him tomorrow, I'm going to tell him that's what he needs to start off with when he makes our visit, is to how to propagate camellias. And this is important, the Camellia Club, you know, has periodic meetings, and it's not just for people who, that's all they think about is camellias. It's for all of us. And you can go, you can take your camellia, and they can tell you what it is and how to propagate it and all of that. They'll answer all your questions at the Camellia Club meetings. And we'll get Skip to talk about that also, because they are a wealth of information. That Camellia Club is one of the oldest in the nation. And it is huge and very successful in Pensacola. So stand by. We'll have more information on propagating camellias.
But now is not the time, would
I wouldn't
you say?
Do it now. I wouldn't do it now. I would think in the spring is going to be your best bet. Yes, that's what I would do.
Okay. All right, got another question that came in. And if you have one or a comment, 850-437-1620. This is the Garden Line. Professor Wiggins.
Oh, no. Quit that.
Acorns seem to be falling more than usual. Could that be caused by the drought?
Oh, I think so. I think it's all...
I'm seeing them everywhere.
Yeah, it's all environmental. Let me say this. I asked a guy the other day where I go buy my bird seed. I said,
"Oh."
I said, "There are no blue jays coming right now. I had tons of them this summer." He said, "Oh yeah, they've all gone away. They've gone up into the northern part of the county because that's where all the acorns are."
Mm-hmm.
And he said they just stay up there for a while until they take care of all of those, and then they'll come back. And they have come back just in the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh, yeah, I blame all that type of thing, the acorns, for example, on the weather. And you can, you know, pick and choose what weather you want. We had snow. Didn't have a lot of freezes. You know, it just depends. Hard to figure out Mother Nature, quite frankly. But you're right. Now, I wonder, with the acorns falling, are we going to have the leaf drop that we always get in the spring?
Oh.
That drives me crazy. I have got a huge oak tree in my front yard, and the leaves just, I can rake it one day, the next day it's as thick as they can be, that they've fallen off. I wonder if we're going to have less a problem with that this year. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, it will.
Because really, that's a great question, but I think it's, for me, that's a hard one to answer, because it really is. What has happened environmentally.
Right. Now, when you have all these acorns in your yard, do you need to rake those up?
I wouldn't worry about them. I think you can, yeah.
Well, you have dozens of trees growing in your yard.
Oh, you might, but I think a lot of times you probably, that doesn't happen. But yeah, you know, no, I wouldn't worry about raking them up. I think you're going to be doing enough raking when the leaves fall.
Start falling, yeah.
You don't need to start that yet. Exactly.
Okay. We're talking with Mike Wiggins, who is our expert here on the Garden Line, 850-437-1620. I've got another question for you that involves a picture of some trees.
Okay.
And this was the trees are alongside the highway. And the question is, let's see, what are these trees? I'm looking for a fast-growing blind.
Okay.
Any suggestions for that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's a topic that we really will get deep into
okay.
as we get a little further, because the time to plant most of those trees that are going to be fast-growing and thick is when they're dormant, when they have no leaves. And we're going to be there in the next month or so. But some of just off the top of my head, red maple is a very fast-growing, thick tree that would be a good tree for a blind. I like river birch.
Ooh.
I think river birch are great. Many people plant them in multi-trunks. They've got when they go dormant, they've got that beautiful peely red bark.
Oh, yeah. I've seen those around. Yeah.
But they're very thick, and it would make a good blind.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many, many other trees that we can plant, and we're going to talk about all of those. But I would wait and pick my tree out when it's dormant, when it has no leaves on it, because to transplant it at that time, you have much less chance of any kind of plant shock. So that's what I would do. And we'll have a show talking about each and every tree and all the pros and cons as we get into the season.
Okay, very good. And I'll have you take a look at the picture during the break
so
you can actually tell me what the tree is. But I've got another question for you.
Yeah, man.
For those of us who are new to the area, can you ask Mike to go into a little bit more about with regard to, overseeding centipede grass with ryegrass? Is this to make a thicker lawn, or is there some other benefits?
I think the major benefit is it's green. Aesthetically, it's very pleasing to have a nice green grass the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Some specifics on that. If you're from another part of the country, a lot of times up north, it's recommended that you scalp your lawn and then put out some winter grass.
Oh, okay.
Do not do that here. Whatever you do, don't mow it shorter than you have all summer long. And you don't want to get it too tall either, because that really doesn't help.
Right.
So you don't want to scalp it. Okay. And then you can sow your ryegrass. The formula is about 10 pounds of ryegrass per 1,000 square feet, and usually it comes in a 50-pound bag or maybe a 40-pound bag. So that's what you do. And as I said, get a little cedar, a hand cedar that has a little crank on it, and just kind of dip the ryegrass out of the bag and walk the lawn sowing that seed. But you've got to do a little bit of your arithmetic. You know, measure how much 10 pounds is.
Mm-hmm.
Also measure your yard to see how many thousand square feet you have. Most suburban lawns, front yards is probably maybe 3,000 square feet, maybe a little, well, more or less, depending on how big it is. But that's kind of the formula you've got to follow. Once you put that ryegrass out, remember what we said a minute ago, avoid that flower bed at all costs. Once you get that ryegrass out, water is the key. Put that water to it, and it will come up everywhere.
How often should you water then?
I would water at least 2 to 3 times a week, easy. And maybe after you've just put it in, after you first sow it, I'd water it every day for a couple of days, kind of get it down to where you want it to get into the turf.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Exactly. But insofar as weed suppression, I don't think that's where we are. So many of the weeds are going to come up in the spring. That brings up a very important point about ryegrass. I'm glad we just thought of this. Do not use your pre-emergence weed killer in November, as we were going to talk about that today, because the date's almost here. November 15th, you put out your pre-emergence weed killer. Do not put out pre-emergence weed killer and ryegrass. Do one or the other, because the pre-emergence weed killer will keep weeds from germinating. That's the beauty of it. But it will keep ryegrass from germinating also.
Defeats the purpose.
It defeats the purpose. So you can put out all that seed, and very little of it's going to come up. So pass on the pre-emergence weed killer and do the ryegrass if you want that green lawn, or to get the green lawn and do the pre-emergence weed killer if you've had a weed problem.
Right.
So that's kind of the schedule.
Oh, no, I'm glad you mentioned that. That's really smart.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, this is the Garden Line with all the answers for you from Mike Wiggins. We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back. 850-437-1620. Still time for your questions on Pep Talk. Good morning. This is the Garden Line on Pep Talk. Got lots of texts coming in. We do get comments every now and again, and I think this one's pretty rich. It says, ryegrass equals weeds and work.
Weeds are one thing. Work is another thing.
That's a whole other deal.
You know, so we have to remember now, we're talking about doing all of this. Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Right,
and
the holidays.
And all the holidays. So in any event, I am,
okay, and you wanted to go back to the tree
question.
I got a
buzz in from the research department. I said, Mike, what's wrong with you? You forgot a couple of good trees for screening. Live oaks. The thing about live oaks, a lot of people say, oh, it's too slow a grower. But once a live oak has a couple of years in the ground and its root system really gets going, it can be a relatively fast-growing tree. So that's live oak. Sycamores, not my favorite. Big dinner plate leaves. When they drop all those leaves, it's a big mess. But if you want a fast-growing, thick tree, sycamore is a good one for here. And don't ever forget of using a crepe myrtle as your screen, too.
Oh, that's true.
You know, get some of your, you know, you can buy dwarf crepe myrtles and medium growing crepe. Get the ones, you know, your traditional crepe myrtles and plant that. And then you don't do any pruning. Just let it go.
Right.
And it'll be a good screen. And I think that's it. I think rest of the trees are kind of smaller.
And I think you said that it looked like trees. In the picture those were junipers.
Oh, it does. It looked like they were some type of juniper. However, they also look like some of your larger growing hollies, like East Palatka holly and American holly and those types that have been pruned. It looks like a Christmas tree. But the picture we got is they're kind of small, so it's hard to tell whether really if it's a holly or if it's a juniper, cypress-type tree. So that's that.
Okay. Any of those would be good.
Good.
All right, sir. You got a list of things you wanted to mention.
Just a few things that we need to talk about this time of year. One, and these are things we've talked about all during the year, but now is the time. And that is spraying with ultra fine oil on our landscaping plants. So many of our landscaping plants, I'm just going to say like sago palms, ligustrum, get scale. The little insects on the backside of the leaves.
We've had a couple people send pictures, the white dots,
if you will. And what happens is this ultra fine oil, if you spray it in spring and fall, you don't want to do it in midsummer, you don't want to do it in midwinter, spring and fall, you spray it right now and you spray it. Be sure you get underneath the leaves of your shrubs and it'll smother those scales. And it'll just literally, for lack of better words, it'll kind of clean things up. And it's really the thing to do. But ultrafine oil is sort of the next generation of oils. We used to use Volk oil. Many of our listeners, I'm sure, have remember that. It's an old ortho product, and we use that. It had very narrow times when you could use it because you didn't want to burn your plants. The ultrafine oil, that time frame has been extended, so you have more time in the fall and spring to spray it. And the nice thing about ultrafine oil is it's organic. It's, you're not dealing with toxic chemicals at all. So it's time to start using your ultrafine oil. There would be most of your lawn spray services, that type of thing, in their shrub programs include oil spray on shrubs.
Well, and now's probably a good time to do it, too, because we're not having any rain.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, because you're right, because you certainly don't want to water your shrubs right after you put that oil on there and wash it off. You're absolutely right. Okay, now here's the one we just talked about a minute ago. The next one is, and we have really beat this one to death, that's the pre-emergence.
Yes.
Do not use the pre-emergence that is included in a weed and feed product. We don't want to do that. That's wrong. That is because the weed part of that is the wrong formula, and we've talked about that a lot. But it is a good time to put the pre-emergence on middle of November. I always say November 15th, and it doesn't have to be exactly that. But middle of November, put the pre-emergence on. Atrazine is a good one. You can find it on the shelves of most garden centers. There are other ones too. But you need to get that on in order to prevent weeds from coming up. And then, as we have said before, you want to come back in February, which is 90 days after November 15th, and do it again. And then you're set. Then, I say you're set. They're not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to keep them all. You're going to have to come back and spray with a post-emergence like Trimec, probably if you've really had a bad weed problem, on with broadleaf weeds, dollar weed, Virginia buttonweed, that type of thing. But this pre-emergence will really help if you go ahead and do that.
So November 15th
November
is a good
15th.
Time.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, we've also talked about fertilization with the winterizer fertilizer. It's too late. I wouldn't do
it. Ooh, okay.
I wouldn't do it. I've always said if you have already bought it and
right.
sitting in your garage, many times I don't like to hold that fertilizer over to another season because they retain moisture. It just this can be a mess. So go ahead and use it. It won't hurt anything as long as it's a low nitrogen, as long as in that fertilizer formula, which is always three numbers, the first number is lower than the other ones. In other words, I wouldn't want you to get out there and put a springtime 28-4-4 on your grass this time of year.
Right.
That would not be good. So just be careful.
Mm-hmm.
Be careful.
So look at those numbers.
Yeah, just don't do it. You know, just don't put any fertilizer on at all. Like I say, unless you've already bought it and you just say, I'm
right.
the heck with it. I've spent my money. I'm going to do it. That would probably do okay, but it's not going to accomplish much.
Okay.
Exactly.
These are all great tips. Right. You don't have anything more on your list there, sir?
I do.
Okay. We got a little bit of time left.
We can go on forever here. Soil test. We've also talked a lot about that. But this is a great time to get a soil test, especially if you've got St. Augustine grass or zoysia grass, to see what your pH is, whether you need lime or not. Because you could put that on right now also. Now, because what you want to do or what you don't want to do is to put lime on within a couple of weeks of putting fertilizer. Well, since we're not going to fertilizer, this would be a good time to put some lime on the yard. And I would certainly do that. And that's about 40 pounds maybe for 1,000 or 2,000 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not expensive, but it sure will help. Because centipede, you don't want to do it. Just don't do it because centipede likes an acid soil, and that's what we have in Pensacola. St. Augustine likes, and zoysia like a little more sweet soil, if you will. That's not a very scientific word.
But we know what you mean.
You get the gist. they need to have a neutral pH around 6 or so. So, and that's what lime will do. And so you need to get that soil test to tell you, though.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of us might not want to put the time in to gather the soil and take it to the county agent and do all of that stuff. If you have St. Augustine and you haven't put lime on in 2 years, I would do it. Just do it and then go from there.
Okay. Great advice from Mike Wiggins on the Garden Line. Still time for a few more questions. 850-437-1620. This is Pep Talk. We'll be back in a minute. Good morning. This is the Garden Line, and we're going to do a quick lightning round because we got a slew of questions that came in at the last minute here. So first one, Mike, how to kill nut sedge in a St. Augustine lawn?
There's a product on the market called Image. You can find it at any garden center, and it's labeled for nut sedge. Some people call it nut grass. It's a sedge. You can tell it's a sedge if you take the stem of the plant and rub it between your thumb and finger, and it's triangular. That makes it a sedge, and use Image.
All right, next question. Where do we get the soil test?
Great question. You can work with the county agent upon Stefani Road or Werner Turf, which is a big supplier of sod in our area, has a program. It's a program dedicated to soil tests. So see them. They've got it all organized, and they will give you a report that will tell you more than you ever wanted to
know. Okay, that's
it's
good.
A great service. That's
all right.
Werner Turf.
Along the same topic, we had a quick comment. It said basic soil.
Basic soil. Well, we've always said in Pensacola, we have no soil.
Right.
We have sand.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we do our gardening, we have to react to that. Organic material like sphagnum peat moss,
mm-hmm.
when we plant a plant, sphagnum peat moss and that type of organic material if we're doing a plant bed. So we have to realize that we just don't want to plant most of our landscaping and our annuals and perennials just in our sand. You need to amend the soil.
Okay. And finally, the last question, we got about 30 seconds. When should we quit watering the lawn?
That's a great question. The grass is great. You know, depending on the weather and all that, the grass will go dormant. Mm-hmm. And pretty much you can kind of back off then for a while. But for now, pay close attention to watering because it's very dry.
All right. What a great show. This has been The Garden Line with Mike Wiggins. So much information. If you didn't get a chance to write it all down, you can listen to this broadcast on newsradio923.com. Just go to the podcast page, Expert Panel, and click on Garden Line, and you'll hear everything that we just talked about today. Thank you, Mr. Wiggins.
Thank you,
show.
Meg. It's always fun.